May it please the court.
Sir.
Mr. Downey. This case involves several instances of professional misconduct that were discovered by the informant after a respondent overdrafted his client trust account. Following a hearing in the matter, the disciplinary hearing panel recommended that this court reprimand respondent with conditions. Informant rejected the panel's recommendation based on a belief that a reprimand is not appropriate in a trust account case involving a knowing violation of the safekeeping property rule. Most of the facts in the case are undisputed. On February 3, 2014, respondent bounced a $5,000 check drawn on his trust account. The check was payable to another attorney to advance legal expenses in a lawsuit planned for a joint client. The check was the second of four $5,000 payments to be made to the other attorney. The first check had also been drawn on the trust account. Under the agreement with the other attorney, respondent, if the lawsuit were successful, respondent would be reimbursed $20,000 in these advance expenses and would share 50-50 in the attorney's fees collected.
Was the $5,000 prior to the check being written deposited? Is this the one where the money was deposited in the account but the check had not cleared?
The $5,000, there was money belonging to both the respondent as well as to his clients in the trust account when the $5,000 check was written and bounced.
Why did it bounce?
Yeah. Well, before you go on, money belonging to respondent in earned but not drawn down fees.
Correct.
Was there any money belonging to the client for whose benefit the expenses were being advanced?
No.
Or were they other clients?
He had not collected any funds from this joint new client to put into the trust account prior to writing the first or second check to this other attorney.
And so why did he write them before that? Because he thought there was money to cover it, or what?
He thought he had enough of his own money, I believe, in the account to cover that check. It bounced, and the only reason the client money wasn't, in fact, misappropriated because of it being in the account was because there wasn't enough money to cover the $5,000 check. So,
but you're alleging that was negligent conduct, and that, as I understood from your brief, the only intentional conduct you cite is his covering the $5,000 check with the $7,000 from his operating account to make sure that there was money to cover that check.
The key element in terms of knowing conduct, in our view, is when he covers that $5,000 bounce check by putting in $7,000 of his own funds into the trust account.
And that's a key thing I want you to make sure you address is, if everything else was negligent, and you both seem to agree negligence, a reprimand would be appropriate for, but you're asking for a suspension because you're saying it was knowing misconduct, but the only knowing misconduct was his covering the $5,000 check with his own money. The alternative would be that the clients would have been harmed. So you're saying by his not covering it.
Well, the check was bounced. It was not going to be transacted.
I understand, but that's not the bouncing. It's not what you say was intentional. The intentional thing was his trying to make sure that he could put $7,000 in there so there would be plenty of money for his clients. And that was an intentional act, and it violates our rules. But is that the kind of intentional act that we're talking about where he's trying to prevent harm, not cause harm?
To me, the best way to have prevented the harm would have been not to put the $7,000.
And then what would have happened if he hadn't done that?
He writes a check out of his operating account for that $5,000, which is what he did on the third and fourth checks to the other attorney. In other words, that bounce check never gets transacted. There's no client harm because the check's never transacted. It bounced.
And there was no client harm. But the intentional act was trying to correct his prior error, and he did it wrong. But is that the kind of intentional conduct that merits suspension?
Well, in my view, it was because he knew, and the panel found, he knew that he was commingling, and that he knew that by putting his money into that.
I understand it was wrong, but they recommended a reprimand, and my understanding is that is why, because his intent was to, he went about the wrong method and used a commingling method, which clearly violates the rules, but his intent was not to take client money, but was to make sure that he covered it, and he should have done it a different way. but his wasn't a wrongful intent. He did it the wrong way, intentional. Well, intending, you see what I, you understand?
I totally understand what you're saying. He tried to make good on a check that would have otherwise harmed clients if that check had ever been transacted.
Right.
It was only transacted after he put his own money in to cover the check. That said, the very act of commingling, which he was doing in this case as well as in other cases where he was putting personal funds into the account under the ABA standards, 4.2, I believe, is a knowing act, the commingling itself.
Okay, but that's not what you argued, because I believe you argued everything else was negligent, but that was intentional. So if that was the only one, it's somewhat different than if there's other conduct also that.
Well, I think the commingling, knowing or not, is an act that under, and I said 4.1, it's 4.12 of the ABA standard, says that the baseline sanction for knowingly dealing improperly with client funds is suspension. The commentary to 4.12 tells us that the most common cases under this standard, 4.12, involve lawyers who commingle client funds with their own. That is a knowing act under the ABA standards, and in my view, that's what happened here, not only with regard to the bounced check, but he was also depositing other funds into his trust account, knowing conduct. You're right. In the brief, we kind of grab hold of the fact that he deposited the $7,000 into the trust account. Nevertheless, the panel found that everything else he did, in fact, everything he did was negligent. We disagree. We at least believe that the commingling was a knowing violation.
And you have to know it's a violation, or just you do something and you know you're doing the thing, but you don't know it's a violation? What are the ABA standards defined as knowing?
I think it's an act of knowing what you're doing is improper. He knew that putting his money into the account was an improper act.
Okay.
They also found, however, that the other acts of commingling were negligent. I believe that the fact that he was putting in a check from Harris Stowe and from Citibank into his trust account was a knowing commingling of funds into the trust account.
So what should he have done once he got notice of the check bouncing?
In my view, Chief Justice, I would say that what you do is you don't put enough money into your account for that check to pass through. You write you just cancel that check, you void it, and you write a check from your operating account for the $5,000, which is what he did on checks 3 and 4 to this other attorney. I don't think that you collect the money from this prospective client, the $20,000 or the $15,000, whatever's still owing, actually the 20 because he's already paid 5, and put it into the trust account and start drawing off of that. But you don't put your own money in the trust account and then write that check so that the bounced check becomes a good check, in my view.
The DHP recommends reprimand, and you're recommending state suspension. How do we reconcile that with Coleman?
In my view, Judge Russell, Coleman, it had some more serious aspects to it, but there was, I think, a sense by the court that Coleman's trust account violations could be addressed and the public could be protected through education. We do believe that the respondent in this case could be educated regarding the proper handling of his trust account in such a way that the public would be protected. What we don't believe is appropriate is to reprimand him with no oversight by our office, even with conditions. Those conditions being that he not violate the rules, that there be a mentor appointed only to establish a trust account properly. And the third situation, I believe, was that it just escapes me. But
we have probation as a possible discipline. Is that
straight probation? That's
that
correct.
Is it your concern that you just can't put enough conditions on the reprimand? Because I'm not sure of anything that changes the conditions that you can put in with a reprimand versus probation versus a state suspension?
My concern, Judge Stith, is the oversight and the fact that we would have the ability with a state suspension to step in if there were continued violations of the trust account rules and have the probation revoked and ask that state suspension be made an actual suspension. I think that's appropriate given the serious nature.
Could you provide the same supervision non-suspended as you could suspended if we gave him a reprimand and said agree to the maximum amount of supervision? Could you still do that?
Certainly, you could amend the conditions of reprimand, and we would increase our monitoring What I think is lacking for a case like this is the fact that it's a serious violation. It's a serious breach of fiduciary duty, and any further violation shouldn't require that we file new Rule 5 information, but should be dealt with more quickly by the court through a revocation of the probation and an imposition of the state suspension into an actual suspension.
The only thing, we wouldn't have the hammer over them of the suspension, of the suspension.
I think that's appropriate, if you want to put it that way, Judge Teitelman. Counsel for a respondent mentions the Armando case from 2011, goes into our brief to find the facts, and it was a memorandum decision, and also cites cases from 1978 and 1985. If I can address that, what happened, I think, in 1978 and 1985, I don't think is relevant today. I can find you cases from that same period where the court disbarred an attorney for violations of the rules that included trust account violations. The only thing I was going to say is Armando arose soon after the overdraft rule went into effect. It provides only limited guidance, I think, to the court today. I can tell you that the OCDC's analysis, guided by this court's decisions, has evolved since 2011. And I would never, if given the Armando facts today, which are very similar to today's facts, I would have not stipulated to a reprimand in that case. I would have recommended at least the state suspension with probation.
Do we have the rule allowing probation to be imposed without underlying suspension? Have we had cases since we've adopted that rule as to the process and the court action if we impose probation separately and there's a violation and
right.
What the consequences of that violation are? Because you said you thought you'd have to file an additional information, and that's why I'm just curious whether we've gone down that road previously.
Yeah, I think the court has, I think, issued straight probation in a couple of cases. In my view, there's a difference between a reprimand with conditions, which I think I was answering Judge Talman
right,
about,
exactly.
and a probation, which if violated, I think we can come back here and ask the court to assess an appropriate sanction against that attorney. So I do think there's a difference between a reprimand with conditions and a straight probation in that regard.
And even if we impose a reprimand plus probation?
Yes, although I'm not, yes. Although I think that's taking two sanctions from Rule 5 and kind of melding them. But
we have done that in the past. Yeah. We changed our rule to permit that a couple years ago.
Well, I think you were allowed to.
We've never done a reprimand with probation.
Sure.
We've done one or the other.
I think you've done reprimand with conditions. I think you've done a straight probation. I'm not sure I've ever seen a reprimand with probation, the combination of those two. But I might be wrong.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Are you ready? May it please the court. Michael Downey for the respondent, Paritosh Sheth. I'm actually going to take the liberty of talking about Mr. Sheth for a few moments before diving into the questions I know the court has. He's probably not someone necessarily known to the court, although if you read our brief, you will realize this is a man who, in addition to being extraordinarily hardworking, has really worked its way up to being a leader of not only the immigrant bar in St. Louis, but the immigrant community in St. Louis. He came over after graduating from the University of Bombay. He received two graduate degrees in non-legal fields. He was working for Petrolite Chemical, and then actually, while working full-time, completed St. Louis University Law School at night. He started his own practice while working full-time until that practice became so vibrant that he decided he would stop his underlying job. If you read through, and I know we've spent some time on this, but I think it's worth noting, he is extraordinarily involved in the immigrant community. He is general counsel of the Indian Cultural Center. He's been involved in the International Institute, doing funding for small immigrant projects. He provides legal assistance both the Hindu Temple and the Northwest Islamic Center. Frankly, I feel honored to represent him. I think he's truly an amazing member of the bar, and I think he's someone that we should realize has built himself up, has pulled himself up. He is here today on a trust account violation. And I think the questions from the panel do a really good job of focusing on what I think is a key issue here. There's a question of intentional conduct, and it's a different question than intentional misconduct. We've admitted that he deposited the money into the account to cover the overdraft. Mr. Pratzel has indicated in this case perhaps he should have and could have let that check be invalidated and not get paid. As I was listening to the questioning, though, I was thinking of the circumstance that we now do see, and as you know, I've argued a number of cases before you. What about the case where the lawyer receives a payment, thinks the lawyer is allowed to pay out money, and then learns that that payment was not improper? So now, say they've received a $10,000 check, they've dispersed $2,000 of it to a doctor or their care provider, and now they're saying, oh no, the $10,000 is invalid. If a lawyer called me, I would want to say to them, you probably need to put the $2,000 in the trust account, because otherwise, when the doctor tenders that check to the bank, the money's coming out and it's going to be somebody's money, and if it's not the correct money, it's going to be the incorrect money. And I think we're creating a real fear here of lawyers not knowing how to fix those problems. Yes, you could try to contact the doctor and say, hold the check, rip up the check, I need to write you one for my operating account, I need to do something different.
Well, if you wait till it's good funds, you won't have that trouble.
Exactly. And I could tell you also, as someone who runs my own practice, I check my accounts daily, and they repeatedly tell me what money is available. They never tell me what money is good. And I think, as you know, often lawyers come in here because they've made mistakes. They think, well, I can spend the money because the bank's telling me I have the money. Unfortunately, they don't. And interestingly enough, in this case, when asked about when do funds become good, Ms. Dillon says, well, generally it's 5 to 7 days, but on a credit card where you could have a release of the charge, where someone could deny the charge, it could be 60 or 90 days later. I mean, we really are creating a situation where people just don't know what to do with the money.
Well, in this case, though, on this charge at least, your client knew he didn't have any of that. I mean, your client knew he didn't have any of that client's money in his trust account because he didn't have any.
Mr. Sheff did, and as I think Mr. Pratzel did a good job of answering the questions. Mr. Sheff, like many lawyers, unfortunately, had a habit of not sweeping all the funds out of his account. Now, interestingly enough, and I know I've been here before and complained about the rule, it would be nice if the rule made very clear to people when the funds are due, you have to sweep all of them out. But he incorrectly thought he had left enough of his own money in there to cover this $5,000 check. So he thought he was
writing... Well, to cover both $5,000 checks?
The first check actually was covered.
Well, but by what?
By his own funds that were in the account.
All right. And that's clearly established. There were
yes.
No other client's money being used to cover that check.
Yes. In fact, Ms. Dillon from the OCDC has testified that he never improperly used client funds to pay anything else.
Well, and if... how much of what was left was his earned fees that weren't drawn down, and how much of it was other clients' money?
I hesitate to give the exact numbers because I wasn't looking at the spreadsheet. He had several $1,000s, I believe, of his own money in there, and there would also have been some client money as well.
So does that explain why he put 7 in instead of 10?
I think, frankly, what happened with the 7 and 10, at least his own testimony, was that when he knew he had a $5,000 check rejected, he was worried that there was a larger problem, and so he put in a cushion to take care of it. And we've admitted that wasn't the right thing to do. I do think it would be a better situation if you'd only put the $5,000 in. But I think it was an abundance of caution. You wanted to make sure no client's money was improperly
used. What would have been the right thing now, or is that what you're saying? It's not clear.
I think the tough thing is, you know, the right thing.
Once you get in that situation,
well,
is there a right thing?
He could have, if he had those funds in there, he could have wrote himself a check for $5,000, deposited it, and wrote another check for $5,000, right the same day, basically.
Actually, I mean, even the better course would have been for him if he had earned $6,000 and had $6,000 there. He should have written a check for $6,000 out. And you said that day. It depends upon if he's using the same bank because, again, you have to wait for transactions to occur. Mm-hmm. But, yes, he could have written a check out of his operating account and either from those funds or other funds written the $5,000 check. And the $5,000 check should not have come from the trust account.
But now, once it had, is there any way to make it right without further violating the rule?
I think that what most lawyers would do would be to deposit money into the trust account. And I think because they're concerned they've made a mistake. And I think we're creating a situation here where disciplinary counsel is saying, well, if you knowingly put the money in there, knowing you're not supposed to be putting the money in there, you have a suspendable offense. And I'm saying, wait a second, you're trying to fix a problem. It's not... You might know you're not supposed to do it, but at the same time, you know, it's like speeding to the hospital in an emergency. You know you're violating the speed limit, but you need to get the person there. Here you've said, oh my, I've got an overdraft on my trust account. I have to do something about it. I'm going to put my own money in there so
the
client's money doesn't
get
overdraft
is what brought the attention of the improper activity. The fact that he had a cushion. He violated the very first time he wrote the check, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, he got caught because he wrote another one, right? Well, so, I mean, do you really expect us to look that far down the line or just encourage good behavior at the outset?
What I would say, actually, and what typically happens and what happened here was there was an overdraft, which, mind you, all of the circumstances we're talking about, there would have been an overdraft in the review of the account. The review of the account determined a number, and I think, frankly, the number is about six or so, things that he did improperly with his trust account out of several hundred transactions.
Well, but if he had drawn down the fees when he earned them and put them in his operating account and wrote the checks out of, you know, if he's going to advance expenses to another lawyer, write them out of your operating account.
Absolutely.
Then there never would have been an overdraft.
So absolutely.
Your statement's not correct, that the overdraft was the result of his failure to draw down earned fees and his writing checks on that as if it were just another operating account.
The only thing I hesitate there is that the testimony is clear and the record is clear. He didn't, the Armano case, they talk about him routinely using his trust account as another bank account. In Mr. Sheff's case, that clearly didn't happen. So I agree with you that he should have swept out the funds, that he should have written the check from the operating account, and not doing those things was wrong. But this is not a situation. In fact, one of the things that our brief goes through on pages 14 and 15 is it goes through all the things he did right with his trust account. This is clearly someone who, in addition to building a vibrant practice, was trying to do things the right way. Now, we've admitted, and frankly, the reason we're here on a reprimand, which the court knows is a serious penalty, is because we admit he didn't do everything right. So
is there a handbook, or is there how would he know how to do it the right way?
There is a trust account handbook. The trust account handbook, frankly, if you've looked at it, is very difficult to understand. And also, it has recently been fixed, but for a long time, it wasn't even consistent with Missouri law. It took about 2 years for Missouri Formal Opinion 128, which deals with fixed fees, to go into it. So there is a book. It's posted. You know, obviously, Mr. Sheff actually had testified, and I believe did look at it when he set up his own practice. But it's not an easy thing. And frankly, the rule here has over 30 subsections. Rule 4-1.15, I believe, has 33 subsections. This is not an easy area of the law. And Mr. Sheff, again, did a lot of things right and certainly, you know, was attempting. I think the key thing here was he knowingly did his actions. He didn't knowingly commit misconduct. And the big reason that's shown is that he, in fact, had his own money to cover it, that he immediately covered it with his own money, and that once he understood what he had to do differently, he promptly did it differently. It wasn't someone who was trying to do something wrong.
A number of those subsections, though, are like setting up IOLTA.
Actually, a lot of that now has been moved to yet another rule, 4-1.145, which runs about another two pages. I mean, this is very complicated stuff. As part of teaching legal ethics...
When I fill out my registration every year, I'm very happy. I only have to write down I'm a judge. I don't have to really.
You should be happy about that, Judge.
You'll be both, yes.
And I would love to say, you know, everyone should call me and I'll help them with their trust accounting and I'll send them the invoice. But the reality is, for an awful lot of lawyers, it's a very complicated area with, you know, a zero chance of error.
Now he's prospering. Does he have a bookkeeper? What kind of corrective action? Most lawyers aren't accountants or mathematicians.
Yes.
Not that a mathematician helps you. But what's the corrective action you're proposing?
We have indicated that we believe a reprimand with conditions is appropriate. And the discussion was interesting from the court. I frankly didn't realize you could give probation without a reprimand, or I may have asked for it. My expectation, frankly, was that there would be a reprimand with conditions, and the conditions would effectively mimic him being on probation.
And that gets to Rule 5.225. I checked, and reprimand is for someone who does not need to be monitored. Probation is if you want a period of supervision. You could impose a reprimand and probation, one presumes, or one or the other, but I take it, Mr. Pretzel, he may address it, is he thinks there needs to be supervision, perhaps, of proper monitoring of use of the trust account in the future to make sure that, because there was some question about whether the right software was being used and whether it allowed him to do everything that OCDC believes is required by the rule.
Yes, and I will say, obviously, less punishment is better, so if we can do a probation without reprimand, that would be preferred. To go back to sort of both questions, he's now using a MyCase software. MyCase is one of the law practice managers.
Probation perhaps is nominally more than reprimand.
I realize that, but I'd rather get one rather than two. I frankly think this is a reprimand case, and when I get to the discussion of not only the Armano case, but the other cases cited, I think this is a reprimand case. But he did have a bookkeeper. He has done more with a bookkeeper and, frankly, also has engaged legal ethics counsel, myself, to assist him and calls me. And, frankly, what he's also done, which is not uncommon, is he is now running his practice where he receives many fewer trust account payments, which means that he's at risk of clients not paying. But he said, you know, it's not worth the potential problems. I'd rather just worry about getting paid at the end. And that's a common thing people do.
But how can we be assured that the public is protected if we only do a reprimand? What's the stick?
Well, the reprimand that we had proposed at the hearing panel entered did have certain conditions, including filing of early reports to the disciplinary council. Disciplinary counsel's talking about we'd like to have that suspension hanging over him. The court's well aware that if there's a real problem, they can seek an interim suspension. And that's done through a pleading. It's frankly rather similar in process to the suspension they're talking about having if there was a state suspension. So I don't see that as being a huge material difference. Also, this is an attorney who's practiced for 15 years with absolutely no disciplinary problems and absolutely no other problems. He has, I believe, 20 letters of character in the file. He had two lawyers come in and testify on his behalf. I really think this is a situation of someone who understands they made a mistake, they've attempted to make changes, and you're not going to hear from them again, you know, unless you're recognizing him as a 50-year member of the bar or something. I mean, this is someone who runs a very good practice. You know, he organizes meetings for the Immigration Bar in St. Louis. As I said, he's very involved with the community. This is not someone who's a problem lawyer. So I think, and interestingly enough, when we look at the cases cited by the disciplinary counsel, the Wiles case and the Coleman case, both of those cases involve lawyers who had been disciplined before. In fact, it was interesting when Mr. Pretzel said, well, the Armano case is the only recent one. Those other cases are earlier. The Coleman case is from 2009. The Wiles case is from 2003. Both of them involve significant former discipline. By my count, Wiles was actually admonished, I believe, 10 times. And Coleman had been reprimanded by this court in 2008 before receiving a state suspension in 2009. In addition, one of the big things, on page 27 of the brief, disciplinary counsel states, well, those lawyers had prior discipline, but this one is different. And they cite two reasons. One, they say, this is conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice. I actually did a pretty extensive search to try to figure out why this would be conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice, and I can't tell you why it is. I think it's not. The second thing they said is that there was potential harm to the clients. Well, interestingly enough, in both Wiles and Coleman, there was actual harm to the clients. In the Wiles case, there was competence issues that were raised, there were failure to communicate issues, and there was failure to tell clients about receipt of payments.
Was there also a failure to cooperate with the OCDC's investigation on the part of your client?
No. In fact, actually, Ms. Dillon did indicate he was not happy, that he apparently reached out and attempted to contact Mr. Pratzel, but that he did provide the records that he was requested to provide and did reasonably cooperate. And so actually, we treated that as a mitigating factor. So I would say,
is there a practical effect to your client, whether he's as a state suspension or probation or reprimand? Do any of these things have a practical effect on his practice?
Obviously,
a different effect.
Obviously, it's a question of, you know, what will the penalty be? And being listed as a lawyer who's been suspended and had that suspension stayed is a much greater taint on his record and his reputation than indicating that he's received a reprimand or probation or something else.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I think the court has made a good point when it points out, I think Judge Wilson, that this all gets avoided by simply handling the matter correctly in the first place, not drawing from your trust account against lingering funds that you believe belong to you, but in fact have some client funds in it as well.
Do you agree that this is, look, Mr. Downey, that this is a unclear area of the rules with the 33 sections and the confusion out in the bar?
No. It's got 33 sections because it needs to have 33 sections within the rule. The violations here are very basic. The commingling violation is very basic. Any lawyer who's been out for 15 or 16 years should know that the client trust account is not supposed to hold your funds in it. So the violations are very basic violations here.
And do you think that, what do you think is necessary to protect the public in the future from this particular lawyer? Is there a reason, do you disagree with the characterization of his practice, his pro bono work, that he's hired ethics counsel and has tried to put systems in place to make sure nothing like this happens in the future?
You know, in my view, you know, we trust that's all occurred, but we'd like to verify it. And we believe that probation is appropriate to do that. To simply reprimand him based on three very basic conditions is, in our view, insufficient types of monitoring. Now, do you want to associate with a state suspension? That's up to you, because I think we could come up here and ask for that probation to be revoked if you impose a probationary term. But I think that there is no such thing as negligent commingling under the ABA standards, in my view. And the commentary to 4.12 makes clear that the baseline standard for commingling is suspension. The baseline sanction.
So there's no set of facts under which violation of this would support a reprimand.
I don't want to say never, because back in 2011 I recommended a reprimand in a case not dissimilar from this. But we've evolved. I've evolved, and I think based on this court's interpretation since then, I would never recommend a reprimand in a trust account case involving these types of violations. Even with someone who has a clean history, it's a very serious violation that goes to the very basic requirements and fiduciary obligations we owe to our clients. So no, I would not recommend a reprimand, even with conditions, in any of these trust account cases.
We've had 15 or 20 of these in the last couple of years. Have we ever imposed a sanction less than a suspension stay in a trust account violation that didn't rise to the level of conversion?
I don't believe so. I don't believe that there's been a case in the last 2 years where this court has imposed anything less than a state suspension with probation. That said, I think straight probation does give us an opportunity to come back to the court without having to go through Rule 5 information again. So I just believe this is not negligent commingling. This is not negligent conduct. It's knowing misconduct, and it warrants, in our view, a state suspension with probation, but at least a straight probation with severe monitoring terms.
The initial violation was failure to withdraw from the trust account earned fees. Is that correct?
There was a charge and a violation found on the fact that he wasn't sweeping his account. He was letting fees linger.
What length of time does the record show that the funds stayed in the account that he failed to sweep?
Well, I believe they were there. He was using his account. These were not the only checks that he drew from the trust account payable to third parties. He was writing checks to the Illinois Disciplinary Commission from his trust account, $342. He was writing checks to the Pakistan Club, to the Asian Bar Association, from his trust account. Other checks, other instances noted in our brief that were from the trust account for personal reasons. By the way, Judge Wilson, the last thing I just wanted to say is the panel did find a bad faith obstruction of the disciplinary authority's investigation in its findings and recommendation to the court in violation of standard 9.22E as an aggravator, not a mitigator. He was very upset that we were even looking at his trust account after he overdrafted the trust account.
But he had,
what was the obstruction?
Did he produce everything?
I can't say. Except
I mean, bad attitude, but what was the actual obstruction?
All I can tell you is the panel made the finding. I can't tell you that he didn't ultimately turn over the documents, Judge Draper.
So he had a bad attitude. Is that the basic thing?
Well, they made the finding. I'm just notifying you that he did make the finding.
No, but I want you to notify me what the record shows.
The record shows that he did turn over the records. Once asked, it took some time, but he did turn them over.
Okay. So he didn't turn them over initially when asked.
He was frustrated and displeased.
Did he ever refuse to turn them over when asked, or did he just do it with bad attitude and obnoxiously?
I think he just did it with bad attitude. But I just wanted to make clear that there was a finding by the panel.
Are people usually happy to hear from you? But, they say, "Either call this is the only
well, you know, Judge Tomlin, I think if you overdraft your account, you should expect that we're going to come knocking and looking to audit that trust account. So, you know, I
and you might be concerned that you've written three or four or five or six or seven other checks for personal funds that were covered that are going to be discovered.
Which he had.
And if he hadn't done that, his sins in this regard would have never been discovered.
In my personal experience, when people get upset with us after we come knocking after an overdraft, it's because they know there's other things there that they've done wrong.
Thank you. The case will be submitted.